This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the third hour of the Peter B. Collins Show today. A shout out to our listeners in Portland, Oregon on 620 KPOJ, Seattle, Washington, AM 1090 KPTK, and Missoula, Montana's listening on AM 930. Great to have you all with us. Every week about this time, we check in with Brad Friedman, the citizen journalist who operates bradblog.com, and he is there trying to help us understand election issues and protect the integrity of elections and prevent fraud and those sorts of things. Brad, how you doing today?
I am okay. I'm slightly hectic because I just broke some pretty big news at Bradblog that just seconds before we came on the air here. So I'm pumped up, but I'm ready to go.
Is this the Sequoia story or something newer?
This is the Sequoia story, but it's an exclusive update to that Sequoia story.
Well, you better give us the first baseline, and then you can update it.
All right. Well, the skinny and is that today a judge in New Jersey agreed with the plaintiffs in a lawsuit that they may have access to the Sequoia ABC Advantage touchscreen voting machines that they've been trying to get at ever since they failed on Super Tuesday in six different counties. They reported incorrect voting totals, and they failed to fire up on Election Day. All sorts of problems across six different counties. Sequoia had been fighting them tooth and nail to not let the judge release that those machines to some Princeton professors to examine it independently. Today, the judge gave the okay, so those machines will go for the first time to those Princeton professors for this independent exam. So that was breaking earlier this afternoon, but now I've got the additional news if you want that.
But there's more.
There's more. As a matter of fact, I think you've got Dr. Rebecca Mercury lined up. She will also be interested in this news. Hopefully she can hear it.
Yeah, I think she can. Let's just say hello to her. Dr. Mercury, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yes, hi. Well, thank you very much for having me on the show tonight. I'm actually speaking to you right here from New Jersey, only a few miles away from that courthouse.
Okay.
and I must also correct Brad. He knows they're not touch screens; they're push-button voting machines.
Oh,
but
you're
they
right.
Are
and, for that shortcut I often take, but I could have just said crappy voting machines. But
yeah, I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that.
Well, then, Rebecca, you will have an interest in getting this news that I have added to this Bradblog update to the attorney out there, Penny Vanitas. I've tried to send her the information just before coming on air, but in the AP report on this on the news today, there's a quote from Michelle Schaefer, the spokesperson for Sequoia Voting Machine, and of course my old friend.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know her well too.
Yeah, she doesn't care for me. She talks about the fact that they are currently negotiating with the judge concerning protecting Sequoia's proprietary information. And we believe this result, she says, we believe this result protects both the public's interest and Sequoia's legitimate rights in its intellectual property and trade secrets. However, the Bradblog can report for the first time that just over a week or so ago, the CEO and president of Sequoia Voting Systems admitted in a phone call, a conference phone call to the entire company, that in fact Sequoia does not control their own intellectual property rights to those Sequoia voting machines. They control the source code, but they do not have control of the intellectual property. That is the property of another company that they were supposedly divested from previously. So Sequoia is busy in court negotiating for its intellectual property rights, which it does not own. And in my story, I've got some direct quotes from that phone call of Jack Blaine admitting that, quote, it doesn't matter really whether we have the IP or not. And much, much more.
Now, Brad, what part of privatized elections don't they understand?
Well, apparently they don't understand much of anything when it comes to privacy, because this information is now available from this confidential company-wide phone call.
Oh, that's great. Well, Brad, you are intrepid, and you bring us the news they don't want us to know.
It's the least I can do.
And I'd like to add in here that in the motion to quash, which I believe was linked on Brad's website, I guess, a week or so ago, when Sequoia, there was this whole lengthy, you know, set of pages with testimony from one of the vice presidents, I believe, and some other people. And they repeatedly mentioned the fact that they have contracts with each of the counties saying that they have, you know, IP protection and, you know, that it's all trade secret and they can't reveal it. But in fact, I know for a fact in my own home county, here in Mercer County, we were told repeatedly when we tried to, ask for freedom of information with regard to those contracts, and we did this well before, you know, this current wave of lawsuits. The county executive admitted to us that they in fact did not sign any intellectual property agreements, and they had nothing actually. So when they were claiming this, you know, and again, as you know, if you know about intellectual property, it's the protection of it that you have to prove that you had kept it private and trade secret and that you had made everybody sign agreements. So we believe that there's quite a few counties. Some counties do have agreements that they signed, but we believe that there are quite a few counties in the state that did not sign such agreements and never had them.
Well, if those agreements are with the Sequoia Voting Machine Company, the fact is Sequoia does not have those rights to negotiate at this time. In the first place, as admitted by their own CEO and president.
Wow. So the plot thickens.
Yes, indeed. We're talking with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com and Rebecca Mercury. And, Rebecca, why don't you give us a quick report, some highlights, and then in the next segment we can go into a little more detail. But Brad Friedman was invited to testify before the U.S. Election Assistance Commission's Voting Advocate Roundtable discussion, and you went there as his representative. I have a copy of his statement, and people can read it at bradblog.com. Give us an idea of what the context of this hearing was, and were they paying attention to what you said, or was it just one of these things where talking heads come in and they acknowledge you and read the paper, they thank you for your testimony and just kind of ignore what you said?
Was going to be that, and that was my fear. I didn't feel like wasting a lot of time on this. If it was just going to be a pro forma sort of check the box, and yeah, we heard from advocates, and you know, that's all nice, and pat us on the head, and you know, let us go home. But actually, I believe that it did not turn out to be that. There were three of the four commissioners were there, and Commissioner Rodriguez, Davidson, and Connor were there. The fourth was not there, and also Tom Wilkie, who's the executive director of the EAC, and he's left over from various legacy incarnations of the voting system testing way back to the NACED days. So there were quite a few people who were there, and they were listening very intently, I can tell you. And they didn't actually have them up at the front. They had them actually in the audience. They would introduce them as they came in. So it wasn't like we were sitting at a panel and then speaking to them. It really was a true round table, or more like a rectangle. But they had us sitting around, and we would go around the room and answering these questions and explain to you sort of what the context was. But the fact that we were going around the room meant that we couldn't really have any conversation. So it wasn't like a dialogue. It was just sort of, here's some questions, and then each person can say that, and then you might get one chance for a rebuttal, and that was about it.
So serial testimony, not dialogue.
Right. And there was a, you know, we each were allowed to present a testimony that, that, you know, we could prepare, but then they gave us no time to actually present that. So we didn't actually say that. So we just introduced ourselves and then immediately started answering these questions, which I'll explain in a minute. And then from that, at the very end, they gave us some, you know, each like sort of about 3 to 5 minutes to sum up our general thoughts. But, you know, they really didn't want us to repeat anything that we had already presented in writing. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people did sort of summarize what they had in writing because they were afraid that people wouldn't read them. So here was the questions, and this was the odd thing, was that now there's been five of these. Actually, the fifth one, I think, was today, and they were all for different types of roundtables on the same subject. And this, the one that I attended was an election integrity advocates or voting advocates. It wasn't clear what we really all were. Today, one day it was testers, and today I think it was election officials. So there were all different ones, but they were all asked to answer the same six questions. And the six questions pertain to specific sections in the new, well, not new, but to, you know, potentially be released draft of the voting system guidelines. It's sort of the testing document that they're working on. This is the 2007 version, but they're still working on it. And it will not go into effect until 2012. So they were asking us to answer six specific questions pertaining to that, and that was the context. And these questions were all really having to do with sort of machinations of the design of these systems, and that's what I really want to, you know, explain to you about these questions. But before I get to that, let me tell you, like, who was there. Really, there were really, in my personal opinion, there were really only election integrity advocates that were really four people, myself and Brad, and of course Brad couldn't attend, and Bev Harris, who refused to attend because she thought that the questions were ridiculous, mm-hmm. and didn't want to participate in that.
That's Bev Harris from Black Box Voting. Many people know her.
Black Box Voting. Mm-hmm. And John Washburn, who came from Voters Unite. And everybody else who was there, they had their own agenda, but I don't believe it had anything to do with election integrity or voting integrity. Like, Rob Ritchie was there from Fair Vote, and every time he talked, all he talked about was alternative voting methods and IRV, instant runoff voting, and, you know, what you could do with proportional balloting and why these systems weren't, you know, the testing system wasn't fair to instant runoff voting. So people like that, and Dr. Barbara Simons was there representing verified voting, and her testimony was rather frightening because they keep referring to voter verifiable systems, and what she was really promoting, although she said that, you know, verified voting's position is that currently they're really only in favor of OpScan paper ballots hand prepared with accessible ones for, you know, for disabled people. Mm-hmm. But what she was really promoting was this whole brand new style of cryptographic voting, which I know personally that verified voting has been promoting all along from day one. Mm-hmm. And she was really promoting that, as were many of the other people in the room. Larry Norden from the Brennan Center, mm-hmm. Mark Scall from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Both of those guys are really attorneys.
Rebecca, let me jump in here. We've got to run to a break. We'll continue in just a moment. That is Dr. Rebecca Mercury. She testified at the Election Assistance Commission on behalf of Brad Friedman, who's also with us from bradblog.com. More in a moment. Your calls are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B, the Peter B. Collins Show.
This Green 960 on-demand audio presentation is brought to you by the New Living Expo. If you're looking for a healthier lifestyle, find it at the San Francisco New Living Expo, the Concourse Exhibition Center. Explore 300 exhibits of natural health products and hear from internationally recognized speakers, including acclaimed author Alice Walker. It's sponsored by Green 960 and Cron 4. Details at newlivingexpo.com.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 24 minutes after the hour. We're talking about election issues with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com and his colleague, Dr. Rebecca Mercury, who testified or went to have a chat with the Election Assistance Commission in Washington, D.C. this week. And Rebecca, Brad, let me, even though they didn't accept the pre-written statement and allow you to speak it, it was entered into the record and will be ignored from here forward. But Brad wrote a very powerful comment here that I'd like to cherry pick. He says, regarding touchscreen machines, it is literally impossible for anyone to prove that any single vote ever cast on such a system during any actual election for any candidate or initiative on the ballot has ever actually been cast and recorded accurately as per the intent of any voter. I extend the invitation to any vendor or official, including any member or employee of this commission, to prove otherwise and to demonstrate that any such vote was ever recorded accurately during any American election. Now, this is a big challenge, but they ought to be able to respond. And, Rebecca, were these kind of global issues about the problems with electronic voting systems, were they discussed, or was it all just nibbling around the edges?
Not really. They were not discussed. And, in fact, there was a lot of discussion about trade secrecy, and one of the reasons why you couldn't prove it is because it's a trade secret. So, you would really, even if you could prove it, you wouldn't be able to prove it to Brad, because if, you know, you proved it to him, then, you know, I guess they'd have to
shoot him.
Yeah, something like that. I didn't want to say.
And Brad, would you volunteer for that?
They did. You know, they didn't. They didn't address that. Nor did they even talk about voting. I mean, they really get the whole thrust of this meeting was really to talk about these concepts, which I'll tell you about in a second, that were concocted by this Technical Guidelines Development Commission, it's a committee, part of the Technical Guidelines Development Committee that's part of the EAC, that it's a subpart of it. And basically, one person on that, Ron Rivest, who was at MIT, is an MIT professor in cryptography, and one of the guys down at NIST. And these concepts were concocted as supposedly an answer to being able to prove or, you know, even, you know, being able to have voter-verified paper ballots. They didn't even discuss that.
And if I could jump in for just a second, just to give, because I think I broke in at the top of the show, we didn't get a chance to give Rebecca Mercury's bona fides here, but in fact, she was the one who, you know, these verifiable paper audit trails we talk about to come out of touchscreen voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, what they've become is what they are now, and nobody counts them, and they're completely useless and everything else. But they were originally came out of a concept that came to be known as the Mercury method. It was, in fact, Rebecca Mercury, who is a computer security expert and e-voting expert, who came up with this method of a possible way to create a voter-verified voting system with mm-hmm. these touchscreen systems. But I wanted to throw in regard to, you know, these federal certification standards that she was testifying about at the EAC, Rebecca, you say that it would be a trade secret if they could prove it, but, in fact, is there any way, even if they broke trade secrets, is there any way that you know of, as a specialist in this, that it can ever be proved that someone, that a vote was counted accurately on a touchscreen, push button, whatever, direct recording electronic voting system?
In fact, no, it cannot really ever be proved for all intents and purposes and with all, you know, reasonable doubt set aside. And, in fact, that was one of the points of agreement among all the members, including even the fellow from NIST, that they all agreed that, in fact, computers are there, you know, there are certain mathematical properties of them that makes it impossible for you to test them fully to make sure that they're all working properly.
Mm-hmm.
And we all agreed on that. Everyone who was a scientist at the table, and even the non-scientists, all agreed that it was impossible to do this.
Now,
so we're
Rebecca,
just gonna go ahead and do it the best we can and accept, you know, whatever failures we have, while still telling the voters that every single vote counts.
Rebecca, I have to take a break. Can you stay with us after the break?
Oh, absolutely.
We'll
sure.
continue
so
in a moment.
Give you those points that we talked about
here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.
Live. live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Lots of listeners have been emailing me about Rush Limbaugh's fantasy about riots at the Democratic Convention in Denver. Hey, Rush, take another OxyContin and call me Monday. And the Bush administration has taken another strong position in favor of honest elections in Kenya. Yeah, they're saying Mugabe's got to go. How about that Bush regime, huh? We continue our weekly update on election issues. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with us, and also Dr. Rebecca Mercury, who was there for this conversation with the Election Assistance Commission in Washington just a day or so ago. And we've got a caller on the line I want to get to in a few minutes. Andy is a New Jersey resident who has some comments. But, Rebecca, I promised to give you a chance here to give us another update on this event in Washington. So go ahead.
Right. So these ideas that have been concocted by the EAC / TDGC and NIST, basically the top one is a thing called the innovation class. Basically what they have decided is that the standard that they're writing is completely incapable of dealing with any brand new type of voting machine that somebody could come up with. So if we came up with one tomorrow that was really fantastic, they wouldn't be able to test it because it doesn't necessarily fit and conform to the standards that they've created. So basically, although they're saying it's not intended to fast-track new innovations, it is intended to fast-track new innovations. And basically, they're saying that they don't know how to test them, and they will need to sort of slip them by under this innovation class so we can get new ones certified. And I basically told them that that's ridiculous. What they really need to do is rewrite the standard. And one of the EAC commissioners did admit to me afterwards that she said she also heard this in one of the testing groups that they had in as a roundtable discussion, too. So other people are saying this. So this innovation class is sort of ridiculous. But the reason for the innovation class is to implement the idea of software independence. Now, if you hear the word software independence, and then you're talking about a computer-based system, it's an oxymoron. You can't have something that's independent of software if it uses software. But they've created this ridiculous definition of software independence, where if something is software independent, then any flaws in the software that aren't caught, if it happens to change flaws in the vote count at the end, then that's not software independent. But you could have software in it that may not affect the tallies at the end, and then we'll call that software independent. Well, that's ridiculous. As we well know, once you have software in a system, you can do all sorts of denial of service attacks, and software independence is ridiculous. But when you read Barbara Simon's testimony, which she didn't really speak about this much when she was there, but when you read it, it's on the website, she speaks about this thing called Independent Voter Verifiable Records, IVVR. So we've added yet a new kind of thing, like VVPADs and voter-verified paper ballots. But the scary thing is these IVVRs, because first of all, they're not verifiable, and second of all, is that they're not ballots, they're records, and third of all, they could be some cryptographic mumbo-jumbo that's all just, you know, they wave their hands over it, they say, oh, it's good cryptography, and now we'll have these independent verifiable records. And that's really what's being pushed down. Mm-hmm. There is a great push on on the part of the election community to continue with computerized voting, and that really is the goal and the direction. And this has been on the table for a long while.
And Rebecca, that leads to my question here, which is the mission of the Election Assistance Commission to take every means available to preserve computer-based voting against all of the criticism and the vulnerabilities that we've identified?
Doesn't do anything. They're the ones who certify things. The testing is done, but the EAC actually is—they just use the same people that have been doing this all along. So, is the EAC really doing anything, or are they just sort of a shill for the same group that's led by Tom Wilkie and the same people that he's had working for him all along, who are rubber stamping these voting machines that are going through? And that was brought up by Mom. Who's the only person who had the courage to mention that this is really what's really going on in the certification. And then they immediately, as soon as he said that, they said, we need to adjourn for lunch, and we all had to get up and leave.
All right. Brad?
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, what is really going on here, and what is the EAC really doing?
And that's the question that I tried to speak to in my testimony, which is at bradblog.com, along with links to everyone who participated, their testimony, including Rebecca's, and basically tried to speak to the fact that, look, they've got this 598-page monster document called the Voluntary Voting System Guidelines for 2007, by which all future voting systems will be certified or not by the EAC at the federal level. And with all of that stuff in these 598 pages, which I joke about in my testimony, that, you know, this could get us to the moon and back, but it can't do the simple task of adding 1 + 1 + 1 in a way that citizens, and we were called to by the EAC to a voter advocate roundtable. So voter advocate voters, you know, cannot see the way their vote is being counted, and therefore cannot know. It has literally become impossible for any citizen to know that their vote was counted accurately. Not a rocket scientist like Rush Holt, not a computer scientist like Dr. Rebecca Mercury, not even a former programmer like myself. We should not have to rely on experts. We should not have to trust or believe anybody. And that's what at least I tried to speak to in my statement, and the point that I hope we tried to get across to these folks who are, you know, twisting and torturing all of these technical definitions when they mean absolutely nothing to the voter, Peter.
Mm-hmm. Let me jump to Andy in New York, who claims to be a New Jersey resident. Andy, welcome to the show today.
Hey, thanks a lot, Peter. Hey, thanks, Rebecca and Brad, for all the work you're doing.
Yeah, they really dig into that wonk stuff, don't they? So that we don't have to.
Sorry,
that's for sure.
I'm not sorry. I'm just
well aware of what went on as far as voting goes, and Deborah Bowen trying to nail down the problems, and Busby, Brill Bray, what went on there, Jennings Buchanan, the Wynn Edwards stuff. And when I went in to vote in November in New Jersey, I told them, I'm not voting on the machine. You got to give me paper. I'm not doing it. I don't trust it. And they looked at me like I was from outer space or something, like they'd never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote an editorial. It did get published in a local paper. It was a pretty nice-sized editorial piece. Citizens must demand an accurate vote count, which goes into a lot of detail. It's also on the web. You could access it by Googling. But the education level here, you're dealing with a bunch of Neanderthals. They do not understand the problems with electronic machines. And I just voted last 2 weeks ago in a local election. And again, I told them I would not vote on the electronic machine. Anyway, I've written to all the local assembly Senate people in the state. And I got a call from my assemblyman the other day, and he told me, I don't believe in the merit of your argument at all, but we did pass a bill that we are going to retrofit the machines that have a voter verifiable paper trail. Unfortunately, it won't be done till 2009 after the presidential election.
Well, and Andy, let me add that bill that they've written and those paper trails they're talking about adding to those voting machines make those machines absolutely no more verifiable after an election. There is no way to know, even with those paper trails. And as I said, it was Dr. Mercury herself who sort of came up with the original concept for those. It is impossible, even with those paper trails, to know that those machines counted those votes accurately. I'm sorry your congressperson doesn't realize that.
Well, also, because they never look at the paper trails, for one. I've been in cases in California and Ohio where they have the paper trails, and they never look at them. And even when you go to court, you don't get them to look at them. But the other thing was that your congressperson probably didn't say was that the law actually said they were supposed to have these in place the first of January. And again, because of Sequoia and the lawsuits and all this stuff, they all delayed it, and then the local house, you know, the state house of representatives and the state senate, they voted to extend it to April, and then they voted to extend it again because they just refused to stand up to Sequoia. They refused to say, let's get rid of this and go with OpScan. Now, one good thing I can tell you as a New Jersey voter, and this is what I do, I won't vote on these machines. You can, though, register as an absentee voter. You have to register for every single election as an absentee voter, and you have to fill out the form every single time, but then they will give you a paper ballot, and I actually drive it down to the county and drop it off on election day. So I at least know it got there, and I prepared it by hand. You can do that, but that's not what everybody should
right.
be doing.
I did do that in one election, and as a matter of fact, the assembly person, which is Kevin O'Toole's office, who called me, swore up and down that if I signed up for the absentee ballot, I would get it every election. But
you don't. It's not. It's true. It's untrue. They've lied about that.
Right.
What you will get is an application, and you will only get that application in the November election,
that's right.
the general election. So they've lied about all of
right.
this.
You
know, it's very
time.
Tragic. It's really tragic.
It is. And I've lived in other states where you just signed a permanent absentee ballot and you got it by mail every time, no hassle.
Exactly. We have five elections this year. I wrote them all on my calendar, and then a month before, I have to apply every single time, and I do this basically to annoy them. When I come in, and I drop them off by hand to annoy them, because then you sign the book in there, and they all go, oh, hello, Rebecca. They know who I am. The police officer escorts you into the back, and then you drop it off, and they put a little time stamp on it. Whatever happens to it, I don't know, but at least it got to that stage, which is more than you can say with the electronic voting machine.
Hey, you know, I saw the War of the Worlds, and I happen to know New Jersey's the only place we know the Martians have actually landed.
That is true, and we reenact that every October, actually.
All right.
So come on up to Princeton, and we'll you can see the reenactment, and we'll be very happy to have you there at the reenactment.
Andy, thank you for your call today. Good to hear from you. Rebecca, thank you very much for joining us with an excellent report on, your activities in Washington, and be sure to submit your expenses.
Yes, I will. Thanks very much for having me on.
Okay, great to talk with you.
Thanks, Rebecca.
And Brad, you stay with us. We're going to update the anomalies of Pennsylvania and see what else is breaking on the Brad blog today. More in a moment here, and if you have a comment or a question for Brad, bring it on now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, sponsored by Poly Point Press and John Gorenfeld's new book, Bad Moon Rising. It's all about Reverend Moon and that Washington Times propaganda machine. And for a preview, get on the web and look at the video. It's at thekingofamerica.com. And we continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And, Brad, before our memories fade, Pennsylvania was just a few days ago, the primary, and there were some unusual occurrences, some problems with electronic voting machines, long lines in some precincts, voters denied the opportunity to cast a ballot, at least on their initial morning schedule. Maybe some of them returned. But it seems like there were serious problems, but the corporate media has said every everything's fine.
That's exactly what they said, and there were serious problems even beyond the way you described them there. In fact, voting machines were breaking down all over the state, particularly notable in Philadelphia, where each precinct has only two voting machines, and what they have, as we learned, a ridiculous scheme that if one of them breaks down, no matter how long the lines get, and they had record turnout there, they will not give out a paper ballot unless both machines break down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once they break down, they will give a paper ballot, but it will be a provisional paper ballot, not an emergency paper ballot, but a provisional, which therefore may or may not eventually be counted. It's unbelievable. And during the break, actually, I was just reading, someone sent me some transcript of some of the reporting that was going on CNN, where they had state officials saying there were no reports of irregularities, at the same moment that we know for a fact that hundreds and hundreds of calls were coming in to voter hotlines complaining about downed machines and everything else. And I'll try to run some of those transcripts perhaps over the weekend at Brad Blog. But
and Brad, on those the hotline, we heard numerous reports that nobody ever answered, that people called and they got voicemail or they just got ring, ring, ring. Is somebody finally answering the phone there?
Well, it depends which hotline I suspect you were calling. I do know that they outfitted Rebecca Mercury, who was at one of those precincts in Philadelphia, had told me that they had given cell phones to each precinct in a nice little envelope with the number ready to pre-dial if there were any problems. So they all had cell phones, but what they didn't think ahead far enough was to realize that if everyone had problems at the same time, there wouldn't be enough people to answer them. And apparently those poll workers were trying to call back to the county for information, and they were getting busy signals or nobody was answering. So on the other hotlines you refer to, the voter hotlines, I don't know if people were answering them. Well, I know that they were answering them, but I suspect they, too, may have well been overwhelmed by the number of calls that they were getting.
Yeah. Now,
you wouldn't know it from looking at the media, of course, because they all seem to, say that everything was fine. The state was out there telling people that there was no problems. But in fact, we ran a problem wire throughout the day at Brad Blog, and we have, you can scroll down and you can see dozens and dozens of reports, from the media, where, you know, the headline would be voting goes smoothly, and then the story would be about how hundreds of people were turned away from the voting booth because the machines broke down.
We have a lot of irony in the media like that. There was a report from Baghdad the other day, and Condoleezza Rice was saying how great things are, things are calming down, it's getting better, and the next paragraph was about the repeated attacks of mortar and other rockets on the Green Zone. So we deal with these kinds of dualities a lot now. Brad, up on the homepage there at the Brad Blog right now, you have a screenshot from Pennsylvania's Department of State, and this was early in the evening of Tuesday when votes were coming in, and they show a summary bar at the bottom where Hillary Clinton is shown getting 52% of the vote, and then there are three separate entries for Barack Obama, each one showing 47%, so they had about 198% turnout.
Yeah. Actually, he got on one of those bars 47.2, another 47.4, and on the third one where he received zero votes, that apparently amounts to 47.5% of the vote in Pennsylvania. Yeah, I want to give proper credit here to Brad Blog reader Matt Sersley, who noticed this, who was smart enough to save off a copy of that HTML page, and then furthermore followed it up this week with a phone call to the Pennsylvania Department of State to ask for an explanation of what happened, why Hillary was listed once, and Barack Obama three different times with three different numbers. He got confirmed from the Department of State of the problem. They said that it didn't happen, it's never happened before. And they further said, however, it made no difference in the totals. It's unclear how they know that, but that's what they said. And, in fact, Matt Sersley also recorded that phone call to the Department of State and shared that, and we've got that audio up. Just another one of those anomalies, I guess, that apparently nobody is interested in reporting other than the Brad blog, because the woman at the Department of State said that Matt, who called on, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, he asked, you know, has anybody else called about this? And she said, nope, you're the first one.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you see any opportunity here for recounts or audits, or will the certified vote be different from the announced result, which the media is calling a double-digit victory, and you and others have correctly pointed out that 9.2% is not usually considered a double digit?
No, but there was a little bit of a math anomaly here that kind of allowed Clinton to make that claim, because she, in fact, got 54.6% of the vote, which rounds up to 55, and Obama got 45.4, which rounds down to 45. Mm-hmm. So she was able to trumpet 55-45 victory, and apparently the mainstream media was all too happy to repeat that meme. No, there really is no chance for any recount or anything. 85% of the votes cast in Pennsylvania were cast on these electronic touchscreen machines, which are completely 100% unverifiable, and there is not even that crappy paper trail that we talk about so much.
Yeah.
These are machines are fully paperless. So, in fact, there's nothing to count.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100% faith-based election, and they push that button, they come out with the numbers, and we're expected to say, okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's what it's come to here.
It really has. Well, Brad, thank you for an excellent report. It's been a busy week for you, and I hope you take a little time off and unplug and recharge.
Oh, what are the chances of that, Peter? Hey, one more, just to let you know, it is official. The last of the touchscreen voting machine makers in New York State has withdrawn their attempt at certification. New York State will be all paper ballots.
For the fall election, November?
That's a good question. No, I'm not sure if it's going to be for November or not, to be frank. I think it is, but we'll see, because those machines are being made by Sequoia Voting Systems, and they've got a few problems.
You're just always trying to buck up my confidence. I love it.
It's the least I can do.
All right, Brad Friedman, BradBlog.com. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, sir. That's it for our show today.
Happy trails.
Thank you for listening. If you liked it or didn't, drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Share a podcast with a friend. The link is on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. My thanks to Katrina Rill and Brian Urban.
Keep smiling.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show from Green 960 San Francisco. Find out more about Peter B. at green960.com.